Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, August 6th, 2020. TLSC offers free legal aid to low-income Texans by Royal McGregor. RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. The Texas Legal Services Center helps provide free legal representation, advice, advocacy, and education to underserved people across the state. On Wednesday, the nonprofit organization scored a monumental decision as an Ellis County man with Huntington's disease helped force sweeping changes in his county's sheriff's office. A federal lawsuit was filed in 2019 on behalf of Ruben Solis. However, the case was dismissed Wednesday after the Ellis County Sheriff agreed to new training requirements, policies, and certifications. Wayne Krause Yang, the managing attorney for the Impact Litigation Team at the Texas Legal Services Center, said over the phone on Wednesday afternoon that he hopes this will enact change in other communities throughout Texas. By doing this case, a number of the deputies in Ellis County will go off to other places, and they will be much better informed officers, Yang said. There are all kinds of other people who will benefit from this as well. There's a lot of systemic change that comes with victories like that. Ellis County is located directly south of Dallas County. Waxahachie is the largest city in Ellis County. Yang said many of the people that TLSC helps are veterans, elderly, and people with disabilities. Yang said TLSC has a virtual help center, chat line where people can call in or people can write in through email. Additional information can be found at tlsc.org. OC Board approves slim budget. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa College Board of Trustees approved a $51,171,749 budget for 2020-2021 during their meeting Tuesday. The board convened with limited seating and social distancing in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center. The $51,171,749 figure is unrestricted funds. Restricted and physical plant funds that include federal, state, and private grants came to $14,051,617 for a total budget of $65,223,366. The unrestricted funds for last year were $51,745,312, and the restricted funds were $13,814,943 for a total budget of $65,560,255. The total tax rate was 0.186790, 18.679 cents per $100 valuation for 2020-2021. Board members indicated that they do not anticipate a tax increase. Eric Rich, the attorney for the county, said he would check the statute to see if tax hearings need to be held. Chief Financial Officer Brandy Hamm noted that there are some new initiatives in the budget, such as a medical laboratory assistant program and medication aid program. Instructional faculty and staff changes include freezing 7 positions. A new position in auto, diesel, and a law enforcement training instructor were added for a net change of 5 positions. On administrative staff and support changes, 5 positions have been frozen, including an assistant women's basketball coach, assistant registrar, groundskeeper, and Fab Lab assistant director. 3 college life coaches, an assistant buyer, and 1 social worker will be added. There will be a 1% increase for eligible full-time faculty, professional, and classified staff. a one-time mid-year stipend of 1% with a minimum of $500 for all eligible full-time employees was added, along with a mid-year performance bonus for all eligible full-time employees. OC President Gregory Williams paid tribute to the late Roy Spottiford, a longtime member of the Board of Trustees and former City Council member and Mayor Pro Tem. Board Vice President Gary Johnson, attending the meeting virtually, commended everybody on the budget process. Tommy Clark, Board President, said the main concern was to do whatever they could for the employees. If there were more funds, we would do more, Clark said. The board approved the purchase of a SoftDocs eTrieve cloud subscription for $150,400 to replace ImageNow. A bid of $323,130 for a Nexus switching system to support online instruction was approved. Trustees approved the purchase of a sole source collaborative robot for work table for $286,300, paid for through a Chevron Energy grant. Vice President for Student Services Kim McKay gave an update on federal CARES funding allocated to the college. The funds were for coronavirus relief, and much of it has gone to students to help them transition to online learning. The largest number of students served were aged 18 to 35. 64% are Hispanic, 23% were white, and 12% were African American. 81% were women and 19% male, McKay said. Despite the uncertain times, Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness Don Wood said spring enrollment was up 5%, May semester was up 26%, and summer enrollments were up 6%. OC President Gregory Williams said even during this difficult time, the college has done well, but not perfectly, so they introduced SignalVine, a new texting platform for higher education. SignalVine will be used to survey credit and continuing education students at the start and end of each term to see how OC is doing in real time and gives the college a chance to correct any issues it may have with students. Students can offer positive or negative responses. Officials said most of the responses were positive. Wood said 409 surveys were sent out, 119 returned, with 108 responding positively. Executive Director of Institutional Advancement Jackie Gore, chair of the college's coronavirus task force, reviewed the last 5 months. She said everyone on campus is being asked to wear a face covering, whether it's a face mask or a face shield. There are protocols for students and staff who test positive for coronavirus and for returning to campus. OC Coffee and Community Conversation, OA News at OAOA.com. Odessa College invites the community to join us at 9 a.m. today for the one-hour Coffee and Community Conversation live stream on Facebook covering the topic of Registration 2020. Guest panelists, including Odessa College academic success coaches and faculty, will discuss the process from application to registration, testing, transcripts, payment plans, financial aid, etc. Faculty members will share with students what they can expect during the first week of the term. Coffee and Community Conversation is a weekly panel discussion on topics of current interest and impact. Subjects covered in recent weeks have ranged from social and political trends and the role of law enforcement to changes in the educational system to the COVID-19 virus and its impact on our local, state, and national communities. Viewers can watch the Coffee and Community Conversation live stream and submit questions to the panel via the comments field during the event by logging on to facebook.com/Odessa College. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, August 6th, 2020. Opinion. Texas View, early voting extension, the right call. The Point, Preparing for a large voter turnout will take more time and effort this year. Governor Greg Abbott made the right call, allowing voters more time to cast early ballots for the November general election. The extension of the early voting period by 6 days will help minimize lines at the polls for an election that is expected to draw a record turnout. In Bexar County, primary runoff elections generally garner a 2.6% to 5.3% voter turnout. A double-digit turnout in last month's election has Elections Administrator Jackie Callinan anticipating 60 to 65% of the county's more than 1 million registered voters will show up at the polls for the November election. Presidential elections generally bring out about 50% of registered voters. Preparing for the large voter turnout will take more time and effort this election cycle due to public health concerns and the need for physical distancing and personal protection for poll workers and voters. The better solution would have been to ease the restrictions on who can cast a mail ballot. Given the current political climate, this is unlikely to occur anytime soon, which means those who can vote by mail need to take advantage of the opportunity to reduce the health risks for themselves and others. Texas election law allows mail balloting only for those who have a disability, are 65 or older, or will be out of the state during the election. 1/5 of Bexar County's registered voters are 65 or older. During the spring primaries, 23% of the voters 65 and older cast ballots. Most of these voters appeared in person at the polls. If you are eligible to vote by mail, skip the line. Don't put yourself or someone else at risk. Applications for mail ballots can be submitted now. The application is on the Bexar County Elections website. If all 234,802 Bexar County voters who are 65 or older would cast mail ballots, it would significantly reduce the line at the polls during the early voting period and on Election Day. Early voting for the general election starts October 13th and ends October 30th. If you can't vote by mail, make sure to wear a mask, even though they are not required at the polls. Treat other voters with kindness, even though they might be voting differently than you, and show appreciation to the poll workers, many of whom are older. They are taking great risk to keep democracy humming. San Antonio Express News.
Hi. This is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 4th, 2020, Education section. Girls can join Scouts for free, from staff reports. Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest is having a membership drive. Girls who join through August 27th will get free membership and a free box of Girl Scout cookies, according to a press release from GSDSW. Girls may join online or in person. Go to gsdsw.org, click on Become a Girl Scout, and join today for a code for free membership. After providing information, girls will receive an email about the free box of cookies. To apply in person, visit the office at 901 West Dengar, 2 to 7 p.m. on Tuesdays and 2 to 6 p.m. on Thursdays. For more information, call 243-0401. Scouting is open to kindergartners through high school seniors. During the pandemic, meetings will be virtual, according to the release. Girl Scouts in Southeast New Mexico can now earn a new patch for learning about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Devon Energy is sponsoring the Terra Troopers patch for GSDSW Scouts in Eddy and Lee counties, according to a separate press release. The Devon Geoscience Program kits provide hands-on activities specifically for each Girl Scout program level. The kits include detailed instructions to assist volunteers and leaders as girls dive into science and math. The kits include activities such as teddy bear boat ride, fish, fossils, fuel, seeping stones, natural gas and get the oil out. Social Media Causes Confusion Over State Funding by Sarah Ash, PolitiFact, Texas. The Texas Education Agency is allowing online learning with attendance stipulations, but will not fund school districts if they do not open their schools. If schools do not open and are not funded, there will be no more teachers or school at all. Facebook post from Wilmer Hutchins Elementary School in North Texas. The statement, which has since been deleted, was posted on Facebook as education officials in Texas grapple with how to safely open schools this fall. While the state continues to report relatively high numbers of coronavirus infections and fatalities. While schools do stand to lose funding if they do not follow state guidelines when it comes to reopening their doors, districts have some flexibility in holding virtual school at the beginning of the year. That flexibility was expanded after the Facebook post was published. But if a school were to lose its state funding, it would not necessarily shutter its doors. With the exception of charter schools, public school districts are funded through a combination of local property taxes and state money. The state guarantees a certain amount of money per student to each district every year. Depending on how much the district's local property taxes cover, the state contributes additional funds to ensure each district has a certain amount of funding per child. The number of students that are factored into this calculation comes from average daily attendance for that year, which each district reports to the state. Schools also receive a minor funding allotment per day for students who need extra support, including low-income students and those with disabilities. This means that schools with lower attendance rates receive less state funding. The State Education Agency released its first state of guidelines for the fall semester in early July, detailing requirements for districts in response to the pandemic. The TEA released updated guidelines on July 17th after pushback from some parents and school districts. The guidelines say that public schools must open classrooms for any family wanting a student to learn in person in order to keep all state funding, even in places where the bulk of learning is happening online. Under the guidelines, if every family at one school opted for online learning this fall, the school would still receive state funding, even if the building is not physically open. But if even one family at a school wants a child to receive in-person instruction, that request must be accommodated in order for the school to maintain its state funding. This rule does not apply during the first 3 weeks of school, when districts have the option to limit in-person instruction. The second set of guidelines, which were released well after the Facebook post was made and deleted, said schools could remain virtual for 4 weeks with the option of extending to 8 weeks with a vote from their local school board. Even with this delay, schools are required to provide on-campus instruction for students who do not have access to broadband internet or computers at home to complete their learning virtually. The latest guidelines also say that the state will not reduce funding to a school that is following the guidelines due to lack of attendance for the first 12 weeks of the school year. Instead, schools that are following the guidelines but struggling to maintain attendance numbers will receive funding based on either a 3-year average attendance or an attendance projection. There are two formats that virtual learning can take that still count toward student attendance: virtual class with teachers in real time, called synchronous learning, or a pre-approved plan involving tasks completed on a student's own time, called asynchronous learning. Schools have the option to use either format or a combination for students learning virtually. For students opting to learn in real time over apps like Zoom, teachers must teach for a certain number of minutes in order for it to count as a full day of school for attendance purposes. The number of minutes depends on the student's age, and this style of learning is limited to students in third grade and above. For students learning on their own time, attendance will be based on an approved learning plan and will be measured through daily progress, such as check-ins with teachers or the completion of assignments. This is only virtual option available for students in pre-kindergarten through second grade who the state decided are too young to participate in asynchronous learning program. For schools that offer both kinds of virtual learning, students can be considered present for the day for participating in either type of online learning or combination. It is not clear yet how many families might choose remote learning versus in-person learning for the fall, and schools may opt to ask parents to commit to one option or the other ahead of the start of classes. Schools can also require that families that select online learning stick with the option for the rest of the grading period, which is usually 6 to 9 weeks. The TEA guidelines acknowledge that some schools may need to pause in-person classes due to the positive COVID-19 cases in schools. Schools without remote learning options available that are ordered to close under these circumstances will not receive funding for the closed days unless those days are made up later. The Facebook post also claims that if schools do not open, they will essentially close completely. There has been nothing in TEA guidelines or other communications that has suggested that schools that lose funding will stop operating. Rather, without state funding, districts would most likely have to reduce staff and cut certain programs, according to Clay Robison of the TEA Association. Some districts are in worse shape than other districts. There are some districts out there who will hurt worse than others, but it's going to hurt everyone. If they enact that penalty to cut off even part of state funding, it's going to hurt districts, and they're going to have to make some cuts. Guest view from the San Antonio Express. State off track on its college graduation rates. Low college graduation rates could mean a significant number of Texas jobs going to out-of-state applicants by 2030. That's one of the consequences of Texas not producing the college-educated workforce that companies need. Another consequence is lost opportunity for native Texans, and in turn, a loss in potential income. The demand for college-educated workers in the state increased 54% between 2013 and 16, but the number of Texans with bachelor degrees didn't keep up with that demand, and the state is likely to fall further behind, according to a recently released report from Rice University's Houston Education Research Consortium. Some history to consider. For the first 15 years of the millennium, the state worked hard to close the higher education achievement gaps and provide better access to students. College enrollment in Texas increased by more than 600,000 students during that period, but it did not produce an equivalent number of college graduates. Texas is now working on improving college completion rates. It is 5 years into an ambitious higher education plan to have 60% of Texans between the ages of 25 and 34 earn post-secondary degrees or certificates by the year 2030. Progress on 60 by 30 TX has been slow, and the plan is projected to miss its goal by at least 10%, according to the Rice University report. The Houston-based researcher's findings was based on data collected before the pandemic and the subsequent economic downturn. Those factors will likely have a negative impact on 60 by 30 TX goals, but it is too early to tell. We may have a better picture of the impact of the pandemic on higher education in Texas after classes resume in the fall. We will also have the latest annual report from Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board on the 60 by 30 TX plan. That report, based on the previous school year, is usually released in July, but was postponed until October this year because of the pandemic. When the 60 by 30 TX plan was launched in 2016, about 40% of the targeted age group held a college degree or certificate. By 2018, the percentage had only grown to 43.5%. Academics and researchers are worried about the effect the move to distant learning the loss of jobs and the shifting family situations will have on the next generation of college students. Already, we know that the number of students who filled out the free application for federal student aid for college was down across the nation this spring as schools shifted to distance learning. The number of students who apply for college financial aid is important because it's closely tied to post-secondary enrollment. It is estimated the vast majority of high school seniors who fill it out go on to college directly from high school. Fortunately, in San Antonio, the Alamo College's early deadlines for the first group of students eligible for free tuition under the Alamo Promise Initiative resulted in an increase of FAFSAs over last year. The 6% increase, however, was less than counselors and administrators had anticipated. Those numbers should go up dramatically starting in the 21-22 school year. The filing for the FAFSA, or a state equivalent, will be a high school graduate requirement for Texas high school seniors. If that prompts a surge in college enrollment, the next step is to make a better effort to keep students enrolled through graduation. At present, one in four Texas residents in the 25 to 34 age group has some college but no degree. That's not going to cut it. Even worse, such students often are saddled with debt without the benefit of a degree. The recovery and growth of the Texas economy is dependent on a workforce that can meet employers' needs. Our question, what policies need to change to get Texas on the track to meet the 60 by 30TX plan? Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 2nd, 2020. Letters to the Editor. Board should be commended on LHS issue. First of all, I'd like to sincerely thank Rick Davis for his dedication and outstanding leadership as trustee of the Midland Independent School District. I read his excellent article in the Reporter Telegram on July 26th, reasoning why it was altogether timely, fitting, and proper to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School. I am also grateful to Dr. Jim Dennison, former pastor at First Baptist Church of Midland, for his thoughts on renaming Confederate schools and removing memorials. Understand that I am a graduate of Lee High School, class of 69, and thoroughly enjoyed my years there, including being a Lee Rebel. To be honest, when I was a student, I never gave much thought to the school's name or its Confederate traditions. Later, both of our kids attended Midland High School. Recently, though, I've given a lot of thought and consideration to the matter and think now is the right time that the name be changed, and I highly commend the MISD board for their recent vote to do so. If MISD wanted to honor the present, I'd second the letter to the editor, also in the July 26th edition, by Exa K. Luman, who suggested that the school be renamed John Lewis High School in honor of the U.S. Congressman's long and distinguished service to our country and his commitment to racial equality. Such a name change would be an excellent juxtaposition to the old name. Plus, the LHS initials would remain the same. David L. Smith, former executive director of Abel Hanger Foundation, Huffman. Midland joins March of History. I attended Lee High School the first year it opened and graduated with the class of 64. I'm thrilled that the school board voted to change the name. Even as a teenager, I found it odd that we went to a school named for a Southern trader to the United States. When I graduated, there were no black students at Lee or Midland High, even though it was 10 years after the 1954 Supreme Court school desegregation decision. By 1964, my father was on the school board and got harassed by John Birch Society members for voting to accept federal school lunch assistance. I remember us receiving phone calls at home with threats and innuendos. Congratulations, Midland. You look much more like you have joined the march of history. Jean Leeper Holscher, San Angelo. History is in the textbooks, not the school name. Being perfectly honest, the news of the 6-to-1 vote in favor of changing the name of Robert E. Lee High School surprised me, but I have to admit, I am proud of our school board for taking the initiative, despite the backlash of the community. I know my opinion on the matter isn't going to win me too many friends, but I just took a job in Dallas, so why not? One of the main arguments I've heard about the change is that it is a waste of taxpayer money that could be going to better education. I would argue that this is a step in the right direction for better education for our children. In an op-ed last week, MISD Board President Rick Davis pointed out that LHS was named after the Supreme Court declared desegregated schools unconstitutional. The name was very clearly meant to send a message. Black students are not welcome here. That is no longer the sentiment today, and it should be reflected in the school's name. History is the second argument that I have heard, but history isn't going anywhere. History is in the textbook, not in the name of the school. Also, I don't believe it is about history because most people don't know much about Robert E. Lee other than he fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War. Honestly, he isn't exactly a portrait of success, and he wasn't exactly a nice person. Lee inherited his slaves from his father-in-law, George Washington Custis. When Custis died, his will stipulated that his slaves were to be freed. But Lee inherited his estate and reneged. Several of the slaves ran away, and Lee caught them and had them brutally beaten. 50 lashes for the men and 20 for the women. Lee was cruel toward his slaves, often breaking up families for no reason. Custis kept families together. For the party that claims to have freed the slaves in 1863, they are fighting awfully hard to preserve the Confederacy in 2020, and they frankly can't have it both ways. Dustin Butler. Board is trying to change actual history. My heart sank to the bottom of my feet when I heard the MISD trustees had voted to change the names of Robert E. Lee High School and Robert E. Lee Freshman School. I felt so hopeless. How do you fight communism? They just change or erase whatever it is they don't like. This is supposed to be a democracy, not communist rule. Like it or not, this is actual history. General Lee fought for what he thought was right, even though today it wasn't right. At least he stood up for what he believed. He didn't try to erase history like the communists of today are trying to do. Most of all, I feel so sorry for future generations. They will never know true history, nor have the lessons of brave men who stood for their beliefs. What is next? If I were an atheist, let's erase Jesus' name and all he did. Or if I were anti-Irish, just erase all the necessary things the Irish did. Railroads, buildings, etc., and say they didn't exist. Come election time, we will all remember what these trustees did, not in the best interest of anyone, least of all school kids, just what they want to do. Like Obamacare, they're trying to ram this down our throats. Jackie Ward. Name doesn't make or break a school district. MISD's vote to change the name of two Midland schools is a dismal attempt to mask the issues plaguing the school district. Our community wants to know how the name change will positively impact failing academics within the district. The decision to change the name undermines the real concerns parents and community members have challenged the MISD to correct and now removes millions of dollars from the district that should be spent investing in the quality of education students receive. That is injustice. MISD is an unacceptable district. How does a name change improve that? How will this change reverse the disproportionate number of minority students labeled under special education? What tangible academic results will we see now? How will this name change prepare students for life if they are failing in reading, math, and science? Will this change make our students more competitive in the workforce? Will our most at-risk students suddenly be elevated? Will the name change produce students with higher comprehension, ensure more parental involvement, or miraculously stop bullying? Will it create healthy learning environments or help teachers combat behavior issues proactively? Teachers need to be trained in TBRI. Those funds are now gone. That is not a win for our most vulnerable students. It's an injustice. Students don't need a new school name. Students need support properly equipped highly qualified teachers. Let me reiterate, I don't care about a name. A name doesn't make or break a school district. Leadership does. Our school district is broken, and we entrusted our school board to make it better, and this is what they gave us. They failed our students where it counts most. A name change will not camouflage that truth. I am passionate about the quality of education that students receive. I have and always will be a vocal advocate for teachers, parents, and students. But this isn't a victory. Valuable resources have been stolen from our students. MISD cleverly distracted a few parents to hide academic failures. Our community deserves better. We deserve a school district that values education. Elena Lawrence. Lee was more than a Confederate general. Why would they push forward the Lee High School name change during a pandemic? After the hypocrisy of Rick Davis's announcing the passing of the school board election with missing ballots, saying it could not be changed because of Texas election law, then he pushed forward the name change for Lee High School and told us the Lee High School name change could not be put on the November ballot because of Texas election law. Please start a recall election for Rick Davis. Also, put the Lee High School name change on the ballot. Robert E. Lee was more than just a Confederate general. He was also an educator with several years as superintendent of West Point and president of Washington College after the Civil War. His impact on that college was such that they renamed that college Washington and Lee College after he died. Lee's military success was also based on people's respect for his character. He freed his slaves before the Emancipation Proclamation was written in the middle of the Civil War. He joined the Confederacy only because he chose not to march against his home state and his neighbors. This morning, we read in the paper that the Lee High School online name change petition was disabled. My wife, Martha, read through the postings and didn't find inappropriate content. I'm a retired history teacher at Midland College, and I have a master's in history. If the name change must happen, I would suggest we rename the high school to Washington and Lee, after our first president and the college Lee saved. Also, change rebels to patriots. Ken Bland, Robert E. Lee High School, Class of 1966. Club appreciates MISD Board's decision. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland wishes to thank Midland ISD Board of Trustees for making the decision to change the names of Robert E. Lee High School and Robert E. Lee Freshman High School. As a long-standing community organization that is dedicated to making life the best it can be for all residents of Midland, we welcome this long-awaited change. In today's environment of cultural consciousness, it is refreshing to see that the board is aware of what is best for Midland and understands the concern of many of our residents. Midland is no exception to the efforts underway to improve community pride across the state and America, and especially in southern states. It is time to move beyond Confederate ideas. They have no place in the steps we are taking to heal and respect every life. We believe MISD has performed admirably to embrace change at this time and embrace the hearts and minds of those who are offended by the continuation of negative influences on our community. We especially thank Trustee James Fuller for his leadership and dedication to represent his district. It is not always easy to make decisions about unpopular subjects. As we prepare for the 2020-21 school year amid the COVID-19 pandemic, we anticipate that the board will have more difficult decisions to make and hope they will continue to make the hard but best decisions for our students, faculty, staff, and community. Shirley Howard, President, Negro Business and Professional Women's Club. Economy won't improve until behaviors change. I love this state, was the headline over a scowling President Trump on the Reporter-Telegram Trump Visits Special Education. There weren't any photos of Trump smiling on inside pages either. Most oil, gas, and local state dignitaries were not wearing masks or maintaining social distancing. Thank you, Governor Greg Abbott, and the few others who showed they cared about Midland and Texas residents by wearing their masks. Texas is a U.S. coronavirus hotspot. the unwillingness of huge numbers of West Texans to wear masks or practice social distancing has caused Midland's coronavirus cases to escalate daily and weekly. People 19 to 39 become infected, rarely get sick, but still spread the virus. People over 50 frequently get sick and are more likely to be hospitalized and die. My husband, myself, and most of our friends are over 50. The economy will not improve until people change their behavior. I will not enter a store if I see people not wearing masks. I will not return if I see people inside who removed the mask they were required to wear to enter that store. If an employee without a mask hands me food at a drive-thru, I will not return. As a former Midland business owner, I believe in supporting Midland businesses. I always shop locally rather than online. But when it is clear a business is more interested in profit than in people, I will not risk my health to keep that business open. Perhaps some Reporter Telegram readers felt pride the president visited Midland. Perhaps some looked at photos and felt he supported their fight against Governor Greg Abbott's mandate that masks be worn in public places. Not me. It will be only days until there is another Midland coronavirus spike, until some photographed dignitaries test positive, until offices close temporarily while employees isolate at home, until school reopening is threatened because so many teachers and students are ill or in isolation. To say I love this state is to care about the health of its people. Alethea Lichke.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 2nd, 2020. Other voices. Letters to the editor. Try some radical solutions. A gentle suggestion: close down all public schools in September. Don't close religious schools, and not because of the coronavirus. Why? Because public schools and most universities are failures. They're graduating functional illiterates who can't read, write, or do math. Public school and university students, for the most part, are not being educated. They're being indoctrinated. Many are turning into anti-America Marxists. Yes, these products of our dumbed-down leftists, humanists, government schools, and colleges have burned down more than 500 buildings, looted our stores, burned police cars, have injured and killed police, and have trashed our streets and cities. I wish all public schools and most colleges would close permanently. We should try some other method of education, like religious schools. You say my suggestion is radical. A radical problem requires a radical solution. George Pitts. Fort Stockton. Why was COVID a political football? Please help me understand. Why COVID-19 has become political? COVID-19 is a very serious disease, as the 150,000 souls now with God and their families can attest. And it is equal opportunity, striking people of every walk of life and political persuasion. Donald Trump made the fateful choice to politicize COVID-19. He could have followed the advice of doctors and scientists. If that hadn't worked, he could have blamed them. If it had worked, he could have taken credit for it. But he chose another path. Why Trump and many governors cannot see the direct correlation between suppressing the coronavirus and the reopening of the economy. The sooner the virus is under control, the sooner the economy can restart safely. Why wearing a mask has become a political statement. If it helps to control the virus, doesn't it make sense to wear one? Why the personal freedom of an individual is more important than the common good of the community. It is inconvenient to wear a mask, to socially distance, to be locked down, but if this is the road to a healthy community, does it not make sense to do these things? It's not forever, even though it seems like it is. Why the Trump administration has turned on Dr. Fauci. He is one of the few sane voices in this administration. Why Donald Trump seemingly does not even want to control the virus. Everything he does is against what it takes to control it. Joseph Euchre, Odessa. Guest view. Emergency rooms are a constant. By Dr. Sadeep Bose. Over the past several months, COVID-19 has become a central focus in all of our lives. We anxiously await the news each evening with hopes that the number of cases and hospitalizations are decreasing. However, here in Ector County, just last week, hospital officials for both Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center noted increases in their COVID units as the numbers trend up for hospitalizations. And unfortunately, as cases continue to surge in the wrong direction, we must take certain precautions to protect against the spread of the virus. As we work together to flatten the curve, it seems the virus is affecting every decision we make. But there is a bit of an untold story here, one that we, emergency healthcare providers, have been watching unfold over the past several weeks. It's a situation that everyone must be aware of. While I'm proud to report that our community has worked together to wear masks, social distance, and stay home, people have also inadvertently stopped getting critical emergency health care. In fact, a recent national survey found nearly half of Americans have delayed medical care because of COVID-19, and 11% of those who delayed care saw worsened health conditions as a result. Similarly, emergency room volumes across the country decreased 21% in June 2020 compared to June 2019, which is better than April and May, when volumes were down 48% and 42% compared to levels a year earlier. Here in Odessa, we have seen a similar trend of emergency room visits and EMS requests decreasing significantly. As a result, people are literally dying at home simply because they are afraid to go to an emergency room. In many cases, these consequences are entirely avoidable with proper, timely medical care. For example, if not addressed immediately, a treatable heart attack can turn into lifelong heart disease, or worse, death. Following the initial COVID-19 outbreak, New York City reported an 800% increase in at-home deaths due to fear of contracting the virus in hospitals. The thought of loss of life is troubling enough. Imagine knowing that loss could have been prevented with a short drive to the emergency room. The most common and life-threatening delays in care are from patients with heart disease, stroke, and sepsis. Any delay in seeking care for these conditions places the patient's life at risk and can have massive ramifications for their future health. Stroke victims in particular have shown a dangerous trend of delaying care during the pandemic. New research shows patients are arriving to hospitals and treatment centers an average of 160 minutes later during COVID-19. When every second counts, this is a matter of life and death. COVID-19 may have changed daily lives in many ways, but emergency rooms have stood and remain a constant pillar for communities to rely on. With patient safety always the top priority, emergency care providers are going above and beyond in new health protocols. Just some of the steps being taken include rigorous sanitation protocols, stringent screening processes, mobile units for patient care and procedures, and separate areas for those suspected of having COVID-19. Nothing is more important than protecting patients' lives. Emergency medicine physicians will continue to go the extra mile, taking every precaution possible to ensure a safe, reliable space for every patient who needs it. Let me be clear, there is absolutely no reason to delay care under any circumstances. If you are experiencing chest pain, shortness of breath, weakness, tingling or blurred vision, or any other symptom you feel is an emergency, Please seek immediate care. A health emergency is just that, an emergency. It requires urgent, specialized care, and there should be no question, hesitation, or delay in getting that care. As much as we work together to battle the pandemic, we must also work together to ensure proper health care is not neglected. We all want to be safe and do what is necessary to keep our fellow community members safe. However, that does not mean putting your life or a loved one's life at risk. You must trust we are here to provide the right care at the right time, at the right place, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dr. Sadiq Bose is an emergency physician in Odessa and a member of the Texas College of Emergency Physicians.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Avoid broccoli with IBS. Dear Dr. Roach, in a recent column on irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, you mentioned broccoli as a food to be avoided, citing the FODMAP diet. If you would look at the Monash University list of high FODMAP foods, you will find that broccoli is low. However, cauliflower and other members of the brassica vegetable family are the culprits, being high in FODMAPs. Broccoli is one of the very nutritious vegetables that are allowed on this limited diet, and it would be a shame if people avoided it because of your widely read articles. I have IBS and have no trouble with broccoli. H.M. Answer. I thank H.M. for writing. A recent update from Monash University notes that while the stalks of broccoli are high in overall FODMAPs, fermentable oligodimonosaccharides and polyols, the chemical components of foods that often cause symptoms in people with irritable bowel syndrome, the flowers or heads are low. Consuming just the tops of broccoli should be well tolerated by most people. I want to reiterate that not everybody will have the same response, and consultation with a dietitian nutritionist remains a critical part of taking care of IBS and other gastrointestinal conditions.
Guilt remains 40 years after job reference was withheld. Dear Abby, for Friday, August 7th. Dear Abby, about 40 years ago, I did someone an injustice, and I have felt guilty ever since. I worked for a consulting firm in Washington, D.C. that fired an accounting clerk who was in my small office. I didn't know why she was fired, and I never heard a cross word exchanged between her and her supervisor. She seemed to be capable and friendly. A prospective employer called me for a reference, and because my company told me that it did not respond to requests for references, I didn't give her one. Ever since, I have wished I had shared what I knew about her. If I was allowed a do-over, I would have told the employer about my positive experience with her and my belief that she was capable and friendly. Her being black and not having my reference may have increased her difficulty in finding a job. I am sharing this with your readers so they may avoid making a similar mistake. Guilt-ridden in Texas. Dear Guilt-Ridden, some companies, on the advice of their legal counsel, strictly adhere to a policy of disclosing only dates of hire and discharge of employees. This has nothing to do with race or ethnicity. It was not a mistake to do as your employers instructed, and you should not feel guilty for having done so. Dear Abby, my heart is heavy as I write this. Since the pandemic started, my father-in-law has called us every couple of weeks to ask if we are safe and okay. I have heard nothing from my own father. I finally called him, mentioning that I thought he would call to check on us. His response was, "I'm the adult, you should be checking on me." I have two grown children and two grandchildren, so I was taken aback by the thought that I was not an adult. I mentioned that because he is not in a nursing home, in jail, or has to go to work. I figured he was much safer than my husband and me, who still must go out to work every day and be in contact with hundreds of people. I feel like my father doesn't care about us, like my father-in-law does. What do you think? Disappointed in Florida. Dear Disappointed, I agree that your father doesn't care about you the same way as your father-in-law does. He appears to be so centered upon himself that there's little room to worry about his children's welfare. What do I think? I think that if you love your father, you should give him an occasional call. But when you do, expect nothing in return. And you should thank your lucky stars you have a darling father-in-law who takes up the slack. Dear Abby, I have two close, dear friends. They're my inner circle. Both are extroverts and quite talkative. I'm an introvert and quieter. My problem is, I can't get a word in edgewise when we're together. I'm not sure how to tactfully address this subject with them. Any ideas? Introvert in the Southwest. Dear introvert, yes, speak up and say exactly what you told me. Hey folks, I can't get a word in edgewise. If you say it with a smile, it shouldn't be regarded as insulting, because it's the truth.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Pisces until 9:05 a.m., when the moon enters Aries. Happy birthday for Friday, August 7, 2020. Brilliant and socially adept, you have an irresistible attraction to undercover events. This year, like a detective, you ferret out the truth and put it to lucrative use, very successfully. If single, you carefully search for the right mate and find him or her at the end of the year. If attached, your bond is extremely tight, although a part of you remains reclusive. The love is super strong. Leo understands you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. You'll feel enthused and motivated today, but must direct impatience and possible irritation into positive outlets. You'll be especially forceful and competitive with others, so be aware and tone it down a little in translation. Tonight, burning the midnight oil. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Research projects of all kinds are successful now. If travel plans are discussed, choose to return to an old haunt instead of exploring new territory. Deep meditation helps you understand your life's purpose. A companion from the past might resurface. Tonight, a soothing bath. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Gemini always makes life interesting, and today your ability to communicate is in top form. Trust a hunch. It's an optimum time for networking. Respond enthusiastically to offers of friendship. Tonight, go over old lists of contacts and reach out to some of them. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Catch up on work-related responsibilities, but don't accept new tasks until your home life is balanced. Various volatile situations in your domestic scene gradually resolve. Talented companions stimulate your creative side. A loved one needs more of your time. Tonight, still working. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 4 stars. You've undergone some radical transformations in your beliefs. Review your spiritual journey. Examine where you're going. You'll question old concepts and seek new, deeper levels of truth. It's a time to release practices that no longer inspire you. Tonight, contact a foreign friend. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 2 stars. Don't allow a needy companion to drain your resources. Today could make you a soft touch. Offer words of encouragement, not cash. Be aware of your spending and saving practices. Learn from past experiences. Settle debts. Tonight, take some time for yourself. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. You are the quintessential romantic. Today promises a new understanding of lost loves that just weren't meant to be. Light the way for Cupid's arrows now and for the future with a pair of rose-colored candles. Tonight, dinner with a loved one. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Your survival skills are legendary, and you often completely bounce back from life-threatening situations. Today, the health consequences of past choices become apparent. Conquer any dietary or lifestyle factors that undermine your well-being. You can do it. Tonight, early bedtime. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Be alert to novel income opportunities. A creative idea is worth exploring. Today also promises changes of heart. You fall in and out of love quickly. Remember that your words are powerful and will shape your future, so use them carefully. Tonight, a music fest. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Be patient if someone close to you is moody and sensitive. It's easy to keep relatives happy and to relax at home. A visitor proves to be good company. Be hospitable. An unexpected turn of events is likely for next week. Tonight, home night. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Today provides solutions to complex situations. Helpful information arrives. Examine past patterns. They reveal what to expect for the future. This brings a brainstorming session, which generates new perspectives. There will be a great exchange of ideas. Tonight, write emails. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Bargains can be found. A friend's assistance can be a key factor in generating a windfall. Include snowdrops and other tiny white flowers, which represent hope, in your home or workspace. Follow your hunches. Tonight, meditate on the white flowers. Born today, Spy Matahari, 1876, paleoanthropologist Louis Leakey, 1903, actress Charlize Theron, 1975.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.